Okay, so we are going to start the Sutta teaching session. We will first pay homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. So we were discussing Vatthupama Sutta, which is the seventh sutta in Majjhima Nikaya, simile of the cloth. I'll go through it a little bit again, since we couldn't have it on last Wednesday. Actually, Buddha is giving here a very interesting simile. He mentioned that when there is a kind of stained cloth, a defiled cloth, then it is quite difficult to, or it's almost impossible to dye it. Suppose there is a orange color, green color, red color, those colors are available, whoever wants to dye it so that it will become red color, it will become blue color. Even though he tries it, it fails because the cloth is basically not clean. Cloth is basically stained, defiled. So similarly, Buddha mentioned our mind, when it is defiled, so it is difficult to have a proper direction. And again, as a result of that, one will be reborn in a hell realm, or kind of an unfortunate state. On the other hand, Buddha mentioned similarly, when a cloth is very clean, suppose it's a very clean, new, white color cloth, then if one wants to make it red color, then he can do it, he can dye it. If he wants to make it, say, green color, orange color, whatever the color, easily that new color will be absorbed to that clean cloth. So, similarly, Buddha mentioned, when the mind is clean, you can make whatever you like, you can do whatever beneficial thing. So, if you are putting it into the proper wholesome states, then one can have kind of a happy destination. After the death, one can have happy destination. So after mentioning that, so Buddha now goes on explaining 16 defilements. So they are also called imperfections. They are also called upakkilesa in Pali. Actually, the term upakkilesa in Pali is being used kind of in three notations, or three notions. Now, one notion or one connotation is that they can be kind of hindrances arising during our meditation, either in samatha or either in vipassana. So when it is arising in samatha meditation, so they are also called upakkilesa or imperfections. And the thing is, it's difficult to little bit detect. Say, they can arise in disguise of something wholesome. Something wholesome in the kind of a disguised way they can appear. So therefore it is quite difficult to recognize at the beginning whether it is really a defilement, whether it is really a upakkilesa, because one can't immediately understand whether it is a upakkilesa. So we discussed this in the Upakkilesa Sutta. Just before Vatthupama Sutta, we discussed the Upakkilesa Sutta. So basically, there Buddha mentioned about 11 upakkilesas, defilements, which are basically hindrances to samatha meditation. And there are a fair amount of them are hindrances for vipassana meditation as well. Now, there are another 10 upakkilesas, defilements are mentioned, which are basically again defilements arising in the vipassana meditation. So we'll discuss that later. But right now, I am not going to discuss that. But today, we are going to discuss about the third type. So third connotation. The first connotation is upakkilesas as defilements arising during the samatha meditation. Second one is upakkilesas which are arising during vipassana meditation. Third one is another connotation of upakkilesa is that when we know that the main three roots of unwholesome states, raga, dosa, moha, greed, hatred, delusion. So they are the basic roots of defilements. And there are certain types of defilements. They are actually, we can say, divisions of these three. They have the shades of this greed, hatred, delusion, and bit difficult to understand. So they have some subtle connection with either greed or either hatred or either delusion, but they are also defilements, but little difficult to understand, but they are fairly rooted in these three unwholesome roots. So they are also called subtle defilements or upakkilesa, imperfections. So that is the theme of this Vatthupama Sutta, where Buddha explained 16, around 16 imperfections. So they are basically, some of them are immediately we can understand, they are actually unwholesome states, and they are coming from a certain root, either from greed root, either from hatred, either from delusion, like that we can easily understand. But certain others have little differences, so little difficult to even understand that as a defilement. So actually upakkilesa, the term, have that everywhere, has that particular meaning. So it's little difficult to understand. A yogi has to be quite vigilant, has to be quite wise to understand this kind of subtle defilement as a subtle defilement. What happens is sometimes he get deceived. He might misunderstand it as something wholesome, something righteous, something correct. But once we are deeply investigating, probably you can understand the roots of defilements. So the first one Buddha mentioned is covetousness and unrighteous greed. So covetousness and unrighteous greed. So the greed is, we know, that kind of a desire that we have for our own things, and we have some attachment to that, we have some greed to that, and even we can have a lustful thought to one of our, say, whatever the lustful objects. So that is lust, greed. On the other hand, the kind of vicious kind of lust or vicious kind of greed is the greed which is arising to someone else's possession. Someone else's something is available, and now we have a kind of a improper, unrighteous kind of a greed. So that is called visama lobha, unrighteous kind of a greed, because it doesn't belong to us and it belongs to someone else, and we also have some kind of a strong desire to that. So that is very much like an unrighteous greed. Say for example, if one see that someone else's wife, and if one has a kind of a strong attachment to her, so knowingly that she belongs to someone else and she's a married woman, knowing all this, if one has that kind of a lustful thought, probably we can define it as an unrighteous greed, unrighteous lust, because it's a visama lobha. The object belongs to someone else, and you know very well about it, but still the greed is arising in one's mind. So likewise, when someone has some luxurious car, for example, and probably one can have thought about owning it, possessing it. So if you want to own it, possess it by your own money, that's a different story. But here what we are trying to say is you are having a strong attachment to that, whatever someone else belong, then it is coming under this visama lobha, abhijja visama lobha, covetousness and unrighteous greed. Now, and then Buddha get on to ill will. So ill will also, we can understand, another defilement arising in mind. So when one is basically subjected to some sort of irritation at the beginning, then it may grow into a little bit of anger. It can even grow into ill will. So ill will is a strong kind of hatred one's mind can occupy. So that is also can come to a very higher level. Now, when we know that certain defilements are available, so Buddha mentioned in this particular sutta that the destination would be quite unfortunate. It's very much like a defiled cloth. So unrighteous greed or unrighteous, say, ill will and all these imperfections, defilements, if one is harboring those thoughts, if one is continuing with that kind of an attitude, with that kind of a defiled mind, so one doesn't have a kind of a wholesome state of mind. Instead, one's mind is defiled. So as a result of that, one can be reborn in a kind of an unfortunate state. So the key is that to recognize these defilements. So therefore, Buddha mentioned, when a bhikkhu has known that covetousness and unrighteous greed is an imperfection that defiles the mind, and he is abandoning it. So one has to abandon it. So that's why we need to know what exactly are the defilements, what are their nature. And once we know that, we should work out somehow to remove it from our mind. Now, immediate removal of that from our mind is another story that we need to discuss. Depends on the practice. Or how to confront it immediately. So that's another way. So there are therefore various methods how to handle these defilements. But the important thing is to understand that this is a defilement. Say for example, if one has a kind of a lustful thought, so if one starts promoting it, if one starts having a delight with it, so then it is very unlikely that one may be thinking of removing it. Because one is having kind of a satisfaction with it, one has some sort of a delight with it, so one may even promote it and even get into some sort of obsessive kind of thinking and ultimately get into even transgression of one's precepts, maybe adultery, and all those kind of things can happen because one didn't stop that defilement and even one didn't understand it as a defilement. So understanding defilement as a defilement is very much like the first step. So when one understood a defilement as a defilement, there are various methods one can utilize to overcome that defilement. Say for example, if one has a kind of anger or ill will, probably one can recognize it. Okay, now my mind is burning with anger, burning with ill will. So I need to do something. So that is a kind of a process that you step back and now start watching anger as anger. Uppannang vyapadang santime ajjattang uppannang vyapadoti pajanati. Now when vyapada, ill will, is available in one's mind, so one step back, stand by and just look at anger as anger, ill will as ill will. So this is one important step in Satipatthana practice, mindfulness practice. So how one can step back and watch, rather than getting driven by that defilement, rather than being a victim of that defilement, how one can step back and watch defilement as a defilement. So this is something actually we are learning from our Kayanupassana level even. So how to step back and watch, how to objectively look at something. When the body is breathing, how we can look at breathing as breathing. How rising and falling of the abdomen happens. How one can step back and watch rising and falling as it happens. So basically this is a kind of an exercise, kind of a training that we are continuing so that we can have another perspective. Rather than being going inside the object, rather than being trapped in the experience, one can step back and watch the experience as someone else's experience, as someone else's object, as someone else's phenomena. So this is something that we are constantly developing in Satipatthana practice. I am not telling that one is capable of doing it immediately, but slowly, as one progresses, so this is something going to happen. Now the same principle now applies during the Chittanupassana, establishment of mind, establishment of mindfulness on mind. So there the idea is, even when lust is available in the mind, rather than being a victim of that lust, you can step back and watch lust as lust. Even when ill will or anger is available in the mind, so rather than being victimized by that and driven by that and get into arguments, quarrels, conflicts, etc., rather than doing so, you can step back and watch it. It will as ill with anger as anger. Now this is the training that we need to go through, and this is the way, in a way we can say, kind of confrontation of defilement. So in the mindfulness practice, the satipatthana, so this is encouraged. So you are not encouraged into replacement of the defilement or subsiding it or something else, rather than confronting the defilement. But there are various other methods also. Say if the anger is available, one can develop the opposite. Replace anger with loving kindness. So that's another option. If say lust is available, one can replace it with the loathsomeness of the body. Asubha bhavana. So that's another option. That's a sort of replacement method. And sometimes when lust or anger or any other defilement is available, once you are capable of recognizing it as a defilement, so you can even sort of recollect the danger of those defilements. So that's another method. Or you can even turn back your, or turn away your attention, what you call as asati amanasikara. So likewise, there are many methods available to handle defilements. So that is up to the wisdom to use whatever the skillful means to overcome a defilement. But first of all, we need to understand defilement as a defilement, rather than getting trapped in it, rather than sort of deluded, victimizing. One need to step back, one need to come out of that and watch it as a defilement. So that's a very, very important point. And in the satipatthana practice, so direct observation is encouraged. So you are not doing any sort of a replacement method or kind of reflecting the adinava, the danger. Rather, you are capable of understanding defilement as a defilement. Now you are mindful about it. You are putting your attention to that defilement. As a result of your strong mindfulness and clear comprehension, so defilement can't overpower you. The defilement can't overwhelm you. So whenever anger is there, say you are able to watch it, you are able to observe it, step back and watch it. Now you are not promoting it. You are not further getting burned by that. Instead, the anger starts fading away. Anger starts slowly diminishing. Anger starts ultimately to disappear. So this is kind of a, we can say, a little bit of an advanced practice, where one is immediately capable of understanding anger as anger, ill will as ill will, lust as lust, whatever the defilement as a defilement. And now you are not promoting it, now you are not further deluded by that. But as a result of your very observation, being mindful about it, detached observation, the defilement may start fading away. So this indicates that how much that one's mind is developed with mindfulness. One's mind is developed with clear comprehension. And the other advantage is, so as you are continuing, one may understand, okay, previously, say anger has to come to a certain level for me to notice it. But now, even at its very early stage, one can notice it. Just to give you a rough idea, now suppose you are a person who is getting quickly angry, anger temperament. Now, as a result of this temperament, you being get into confrontation, you are getting into conflicts, you are getting into arguments, and even later you regret about what has happened. So this is the nature, suppose you have. You are regretting because you couldn't control yourself, couldn't maintain your self. So you get into kind of an argument. Say you had a kind of a quarrel with someone, but later you feel, okay, I was too hurry or too rush to come to a conclusion. I was wrong. I went to a misunderstanding, so I am wrong. So likewise, you regret later. Now suppose you are undertaking satipatthana practice. Now what happens is, say slowly you start knowing about yourself, knowing about various emotions, but probably now again you become angry, but you now know that you are angry, and probably the anger is still very strong. you couldn't stop yourself. Say you get into argument again, you blame someone, even hit someone, but knowingly. You know that you are angry, and again you know that I can't stop myself. That is how it has happened. But things happen within your knowledge. So that's not that bad. I mean, it is also not the accepted thing. But this is an indication that now you are very much observing yourself. You have started observing yourself about your mind. Now, once you are further continuing your practice, what happened next is that assume that now anger is available. Now you are very well aware of it. But you didn't go to a quarrel or argument or that kind of a confrontation. But you are still burning with anger. Now you have a little break. You have applied some break. You can control yourself. And you still know, okay, anger is available in the mind. It's in the obsessive level. Doesn't matter. But you have some control. So that's another level. Suppose now you are further continuing your practice. As you are further continuing your practice, you come to a level. Okay, anger is there, but not that level, not that burning level, but a kind of a mild level, mild anger or mild resentment, mild kind of irritation. So you are knowing at that level. So your mind has become fairly sensitive, mindful. So you are capable of recognizing a defilement at its early stage. Now, once you recognize it at its early stage and you are able to kind of detach from it, now you start watching it distantly. So now you are not promoting that defilement. Neither you are sort of being victimized to that. Now what happens, that very sort of early defilement, in a way we can say a kind of weak defilement, now easily start disappearing. Now your mind is fairly strong. Your mindfulness is fairly strong, your wisdom is getting strong, and now you are capable of keeping your mind somewhat undefiled, and you are capable of handling various defilements. Now, so this is the stage that you may come across once you are further developing your practice, and there can be even another developed level where you can immediately understand even the first thought of anger, first thought of irritation. So that also one can recognize. Anuppannassa kamaschandassa upado hoti sanchapajanati. Anuppannassa vyapadassa upado hoti sanchapajanati. So likewise Buddha mentioned in the Satipatthana Sutta, Dhammanupassana, there was no anger, there was no lust, there was no any defilement, and you are very well aware of the mind. But now you know, okay, due to some reason, a defilement is just arising. Its very first sign has happened. And you can even notice that. So this is a very advanced or the fairly developed level of recognition. Say you are able to understand the defilement as defilement at its very, very early stage. Now Buddha keep going and explaining the other defilements, but the methodology with respect to Satipatthana practice is the same for all the defilements. So defilements have their different, kind of their different tastes or different functions, different shades of lust, hate, and delusion. But the yogi is now capable of understanding that maybe at their early stage. Because now the mind is very sensitive, very mindful, you are attentive, keep on watching yourself, guarding yourself, monitoring yourself. As a result of that, you are not being a victim of defilements so often. But sometimes what happens is when one is not developed, not enough practice, so you easily get victimized to many defilements. But later, as you continue, you can be away from defilements for a certain time. You can maintain your mind free from defilements for a certain time. And you encourage that. And that is another important thing. Because when a defilement is operating in our mind, probably we feel more active. Say when you are angry, so you feel burning, you feel your presence, you feel strong, you feel that you are a kind of a strong individual. So you as a person will be highlighted, will be sort of indicated. Your conceit has grown, your ego has grown when a defilement is operating in the mind. You as an individual now very much like highlighted. I mean, it can happen to the other side as well. Now suppose if you have a conceit, which kind of a lower kind of conceit, then you feel timid and you feel little afraid, and that also possible. So both extremes are possible. So this individualism or sakkayaditti, the personality view, being promoted when the defilements are present. Now therefore these defilements are in a way has a direct relationship with the attainments. Certain defilements are completely uprooted when one becomes a sotapanna. Certain other defilements are fairly faded away or diluted when you attain another level. And certain other defilements are completely uprooted again once you attain the another attainment, like a non-returner level. So likewise, these defilements can be again recognized, how they can be completely uprooted from the mind after attaining the certain attainments, say sotapanna, sakadagami, anagami, arahat level. So I mean, at that level typically they are defined as sanyojana, fetters, and that is how typically it's mentioned. But here also we can understand certain defilements, we'll discuss that later, how they are systematically removed when one is attaining a particular state of sainthood, we can say. Now, resentment, contempt, insolence, envy, avarice, deceit, fraud, obstinacy, rivalry. Now, these are different kinds of defilements listed. So, they have different tastes in a way. So, you can't say that all the defilements have the same kind of appearance, but they have different appearances. Now, if we consider resentment, so that is, resentment is very much like a strong revengeful kind of a defilement. Say at the beginning, ill will is simply defiling your mind, simply staining your mind. If you continue that, if you again and again think about the particular person, and now anger is growing, ill will is growing, and now you are going to have a kind of a grudge. And ultimately it can become an enveloped your mind, completely envelop your mind, and you may even, if the person is not in your front, or you may even shift to a completely different place, even if you migrate, still you have a strong anger towards that person. So that is called actually this upanaha, or what you call this strong kind of a defilement, anger, but it can even go to the next birth. So you are holding it, you are completely holding that anger. So you can see at different levels if we consider the anger. So the mild kind of irritation may be the beginning, maybe you are changing it to the growing it to ill will kind of thing, or anger kind of thing, then you get into ill will, and ultimately it can come through a resentment where you are maintaining kind of a strong grudge towards another person. When it is possible, you are going to... Sorry?
Are you still sharing your screen, Bhante?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not showing it at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, because I want to see some other document to explain the certain details about the defilements.
Sure, yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Okay, and then actually the other one is called the contempt. Contempt. So contempt is something that Buddha explained in the list. So the contempt is where what you call in Pali as makkha. Suppose that someone has helped you, but later you simply ignore that, you simply forget it, and you even look down it. You simply even neglect it. Suppose someone has helped immensely. Say you were in a trouble and you that particular person came forward, all the others might have neglected, that particular person came and helped you and did a real kind of a saving, safeguarding. But later you didn't have any gratitude, simply you are neglecting, you simply even belittle that person and ignore that person, and you can even criticize or say thinking very low about what he has done. So that is called makka, contempt, where kind of devaluation of the benefits. Devaluation of the benefits conferred by someone else. And palasa, makka palasa go fairly hand in hand. Palasa is where what you call as insolence, where one sort of condemns someone else's high quality. Now say you are dealing with the teacher, you are dealing with the elder, or maybe with the Kalyana Mitta, a good person, and you recognize his good qualities, maybe superior qualities, but now kind of a defilement arising in your mind, kind of devaluing that quality. So previously that the mind has devalued what the help, benefit that one has taken, obtained. But here, one is devaluing someone else's superior quality. So that is called palasa. So the previous one is makka, then this is palasa. In the palasa, what you call the yugagaha also, insolence, one is really condemning one's good qualities, someone else's good qualities. And issa, you probably have heard about envy. So envy is something that when one see someone else's resources, someone else's fortune, rather than having kind of a either equanimous or either happy kind of state of mind, one has kind of envious kind of state of mind. So you can't stand someone else's good fortune. Say someone has passed an exam. Suppose that you have your children and someone else's children are also there. Suppose that someone else's have their children have done at the exam very well. Then after knowing that, probably you can have envious. You can be envious about that particular child, that particular person. You are comparing your children with someone else's children, and you can have kind of envy, jealousy towards that particular person. Suppose that someone is using a luxurious house, and you see that, and you may can have jealousy towards that. And someone is having a good job while you are not, and you can be envious, jealous about that person. And even it can come to the meditation. Say someone is developing samatha meditation and you are struggling still, that someone else has fairly developed, and suppose that he is now explaining to the teacher that he has attained first jhana. Now you are simply struggling. At that time you can have a kind of jealousy towards that particular person, because you know he has some better achievement than you. At that time, at that moment, probably envy, jealousy can arise. And if in vipassana, if it arise, then actually that the important thing is one need to understand it. So the whole discussion, the theme of discussion is to understand these defilements. So we can't immediately say that I am completely free from all these defilements. Rather, there's a potential to arise these defilements in our mind. So one has to be vigilant, one has to be quite mindful when these defilements are going to arise. And one has to notice them. So when jealousy is arising in the mind, so you got to step back and watch it, understand it, rather than promoting it and even get into kind of resentment or anger towards that person, because that is the next level of the development of envy. Next level of the development of what you call the jealousy. So you got to know that now this is the jealousy arising in my mind. As I mentioned, say now when someone is doing really well, maybe economically, maybe spiritually, whatever the way. So if we have kind of a resentment, if we have kind of a anger, probably it is, I mean, not because that he has done something wrong to you, but because you have kind of a jealousy. Say someone else being really respected, reverence has become a kind of a reverenced all the time, but you are not. You're also expecting kind of a respect, but you are not. But someone else has been subjected to kind of a respect. And you noticing that event, probably you can become envious towards that person. You can become jealous about that person. So these are defilements. Therefore, I mean, to understand now this is a defilement arising in the mind is kind of a tricky thing. Typically, immediately when lust arises, immediately anger arises, of course we can understand. But when, say, jealousy arises, when envy arises, may be difficult to understand. Probably it may represent as little bit of irritation in your mind. Maybe you can't stand with him, you can't move with him. Not because he has done anything wrong to you, but a fair amount of jealousy being now developed in the mind. So that doesn't allow you to move along with him, coordinate with him, be with him, respect him, or say talk to him, because the jealousy is now operating in the mind. So if we consider kind of a relationship, say there are two children and mother favors one child. The other child can be a little jealous about that situation because he or she is not getting enough attention from mother, but the other brother or sister is getting more attention. Now this child can become envious about the other child. So these are very common things. Now, say husband is interested of one particular person. Say wife being neglected. So then in that occasion, probably the wife can have a jealousy, envy, and it can grow even to the anger and get into argument, quarrels. I mean, this is how slowly things are getting to family problems, divorce issues, all these things. So when we consider the very deep or very early primary level of our mind, so these are the very subtle defilements operating in our mind. They are growing slowly to the higher levels. Ultimately, they overwhelm the person and get into arguments, get into conflicts, get into fights, and now in a big trouble. But if one can understand the defilement at their very early stage, then it's a very good skill. There one can uproot it. There one can have some kind of a remedy so that one is free from the defilement. Now, machariya or avarice is another defilement where one is having some sort of greed, where you don't like someone else using your resource. Say for example, you have cleaned the garden and now someone else is coming and making use of it and playing there. But you are the one spend fair amount of time there and you put your hard labor there. But someone else is now making use of it, enjoying that. Seeing that, rather than being happy about it, you might feel a little angry. You might feel a little uncomfortable. So this is maybe because of the avarice, that you don't like someone is benefiting from what you have done. You don't feel like happy when someone else is using your whatever the resource. Suppose you have given a loan to someone, that someone is in a little trouble and they ask some money and you lend some money. And suppose now he completely overcome that situation and he has now doing well. Now you notice that he's now getting well, he's getting free from that trouble, and rather than being happy about it, probably you can have a little bit of uncomfortable, uneasy kind of a state of mind. So this can be due to avarice, because you have already given but you don't really appreciate that. You can't really enjoy that, even though you have given it. And on top of that, you can't even give something. Even someone is asking, you can't even give. When you are a person who is with lot of avarice, you can't share anything with someone else. You may even collect so many things, you may even gather so many things. Even some your own children, your wife, husband, your relatives, friends are not benefiting if one is overwhelmed by avarice. So the person who is overwhelmed by avarice never share his or her things with others. He can't do it. So therefore it's a great defilement going against the generosity. So one can't be generous when avarice is available. So you can see, I mean, in order to overcome these defilements, is not only, in a way we can say, the meditation only helps. Meditation actually helps, but even before that, probably generosity, being kind, and having good manners, and you know, patience. So likewise, there are various other conditions, other wholesome states, other good practices also help. But later, once one is developing in the Satipatthana, there the real development happens, where you yourself understand when avarice arise, when resentment arise, when ill will arise, when jealousy arise. So you can even understand these little differences, little nuances of the defilement. So if one can understand that, so then he is a really capable person, understanding these little nuances of the defilements, and he, rather than being a victim of it, is capable of overcoming that, removing it. So these are the things that I like to discuss today. So there are some more actually to discuss. So idea is to understand these defilements at their early stage as much as possible. Because when a particular defilement is there in one's mind for long time, say then your mind become really inclined towards that defilement. So that's another state. Say for example, you are promoting lust in your mind. You are enjoying lust. You are delighted with lust. And you are purposely, say, seeing something, you are hearing something where the lust is growing. And later, your mind is completely colored by lust. Now you don't need to do it additionally, but the mind is completely inclined towards lust. So whenever you have nothing much to get involved, you are not engaged with something else, automatically now mind shift to lust. So this is actually very well explained in the Deha Vitakka Sutta. Buddha mentioned whatever the kind of defilement or the defiled state that you are promoting in your mind, so your mind become conditioned in that side. Your mind become colored in that side. So now very much like you are trapped in it. Now automatically that particular defilement is arising again and again in the mind. And I mean, you purposely have to stop it now. You have to develop the opposite. You have to put a lot of effort to overcome, because you have promoted a particular defilement in your mind, knowingly or unknowingly, and that's a real harm that one can do to one's mind. So therefore, recognizing defilements, overcoming them, keeping them away, keeping the mind undefiled, free from defilements, purify one's mind from defilements, is actually a very strong part of the practice. And it's an ancient practice. It's not just this Buddha has mentioned, but again, our Buddha has mentioned, is one of the very ancient, one of the very authentic kind of practice coming from all the Buddhas. In the Aryavasa Sutta, or rather Aryavamsa Sutta, Buddha highlighted that one is having kind of a strong desire to remove the defilements. So that's called Pahana Ramo, Pahana Rato. So one is always oriented towards removing defilements from one's mind. One understand, okay, defilements are the ones hindering the mind. Defilements are the ones stopping me from attaining Nibbana. They are the ones burning the mind. So one has a strong desire, therefore, to overcome defilements, to remove defilements, to purify one's mind. So therefore, I mean, these purifications only can happen through spiritual development. And later, actually, in this very sutta, there's a very interesting discussion about it. And we can decide, or we can, discuss that later. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon, sutta teaching. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Joining us for the first time, you may ask questions via the chat, or you may also raise your hand. So Bente, it is my own experience that in meditation, sometimes these defilements, there's a certain quality to each one of those different defilements that you've mentioned. But it's not so easy for the mind to recognize, you know, what those subtle differences are.
Yes.
But that comes with practice and experience, right? From seeing these defilements over and over to start differentiating mm-hmm. and recognize the differences between the two. Is that right, Bhante?
Yeah. That's also true. And the other thing is that one has maintained undefiled mind for a certain time. Because one has to experience undefiled, fairly cleaned, purified mind, unattached mind, relaxed mind, restful mind, fairly simplified mind, in a way empty mind for a long time. So then it is quite easy for one to understand defilements at their very early stage. And again, there are different colors, there are different connotations, there are differences actually. Because you are capable of referencing to your original state of mind. So our original state of mind, very undefiled state of mind, is always very much like a neutral. We can simply say it's very much like the water. So water is colorless. It doesn't have any color. But the very moment that you put a little bit of ink or something, then that area become colored. But if the water is already pure, you can immediately understand that. Now, similarly, in this particular sutta, Buddha is giving the simile of clean cloth. So the cloth is already clean, at least for some time, and you are familiar with it now. Okay, this is the clean. This is a very bright, or this is the white, fresh type of cloth. Now you are familiar with it. Now you are handling it. Now you are quite used to, used to it. The moment a little bit of ink dropped to that particular cloth, okay, it is easily noticeable. Even a little stain is there, it is easily noticeable. So therefore, the practice helps us to have temporary freedom of the mind. In Satipatthana practice, as we are continuing, so there are situations. Yeah, mind become undefiled, unattached, non-grasping, and basically free. It is not established at anywhere. Anisitocha viharati. Now it is not associating anything. So that state one has to properly recognize. So that is the crux in a way. That is the difficult part. Because at that pure state of mind, unattached state of mind, unassociated state of mind, there is no indication of an individual. There is no indication of a person. As a result of that, you are not getting excited there. You are not feeling excited there. You are not feeling interested there. So you might feel a little bored. You might feel lethargic. And you might feel a little passive even. But you need to see, it is not attached to anything. It is not established at anywhere. So that is another point that we need to know. So once we come across this unattached, unestablished state of mind during our meditation, so you need to properly notice it. You need to promote it. You need to dwell in it. You need to live in it. Then you are getting familiar with to this pure state of mind, unattached state of mind, uncolored state of mind, unconditioned state of mind, as much as possible. Now, when a subtle defilement arises, now you can easily understand.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. So, it sounds like we need to, you know, obviously have experienced this very pure state of mind for some period of time. So it's more so for a more advanced practitioner. But for those who maybe hasn't gotten there yet, mm-hmm. but in the beginning, I guess we just knowing the general categories of this is, you know, ignorance, anger, and greed, is that enough in the beginning?
Yeah, we can say like that. I mean, because when they are angry, when they are lustful, they can know it. So the mindfulness helps you to know that, but they can't stop it because it has come to a certain higher level. Then only he become little awake about it, little sensitive about it, careful about it. Now only you applied break, but the mind has already catch up some momentum. So probably you can't stop, but you understand that. But that is the situation. Probably you can start developing the opposite. Like when anger is there, you are now developing loving kindness. When lust is there, you are developing loathsomeness. So likewise, you are taking different actions because you couldn't recognize the defilement at its early stage. Still, the mindfulness is not powerful enough. And you are not familiar with, as you said, about that pure state of mind. So there are, various strategies, methods are still available even to that person. And on top of that, the morality, the sealer, is also there. So that's why, we can't immediately have a completely pure mind, undefiled mind. We constantly getting sort of impure defilements in the mind. But if we are concerned about our sealer, if we are concerned about our precepts, our morality, then we have a fair amount of refuge, fair amount of safety, because you don't want to breach the precepts. You don't want to break the precepts. You are being bound by precepts. Because precepts are necessary because you don't know how mind would react. And now when it is promoting something, now the mind is asking to do something. Now you can quickly remember, okay, there's a precept involved there. Now, say for example, say monks are not allowed to touch a woman. Now, suppose a monk is traveling by a bus and so there are, say, women there. Probably a desire arises to touch a woman because monk is not an arahant. So say he simply has her as a human being. So probably a lustful thought arising in one's mind to touch. But the moment that he understands, okay, as a monk, I am not supposed to touch a woman. There's a precept involved there. So I'll be in trouble if I touch this woman lustfully. So then immediately probably that precept comes to his mind. Now he stops himself. So therefore the morality also play a big role in this situation, because you can't guarantee about your mind. You can't immediately come to a conclusion you are completely free from defilements. So the defilements can arise. There's a potential. But the sealer is also helping us to safeguard ourselves. So you want to understand the value of the sealer. One understand the necessity of the sealer. Because one knows this mind is quite wild. You can't really guarantee it. You can't give a certificate to that. Rather, mind can become quite wild in certain occasions. On such occasions, actually, the sealer helps us to protect ourselves.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite you to Debbie for the next question.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, you said that before when you started the sutta, you spoke about four ways of tackling the key lasers. You first said to watch it, which is at the Satipatthana level, the only watch. But then if you are going to use other methods, you said to reiterate metta or subha for last. And then you also said to recollect the danger. And what was the fourth thing that you said, Bhante?
Actually, these are explained in the Vitakka Santana Sutta. So that's what I was referring. So there are five methods explained there. One is, as I mentioned, the replacement. Say when anger is there, you are replacing that with loving kindness. So that is
metta.
That is metta. So, and the other thing is, say you reflect about the danger. Say when anger is there, you are... I mean, rather than you are confronting anger, you are recalling, okay, if last time what happened when I was angry? I mean, I get in trouble. I went to argument. I mean, it's ultimately spoiled the whole relationship. So, likewise, I mean, you can either think from very mundane terms. On the other hand, as a practitioner, you can think, okay, anger is something defiling my mind and I am start burning instead of sort of calming down. And now I am... sort of deviated from my practice, it is harmful to my practice. So likewise, you reflect about the danger about this particular defilement. So that's another approach. And then third, Buddha mentioned asati, asati amanisikara, where you are turning away your attention. Now say for example, you come across particular person, and when you are seeing that person, suppose there is anger arising, probably you can look someone else. You are turning your attention, you are turning your head to someone else, some other incident. So likewise, you are turning away your attention to something different, not to this particular incident or this particular person. Because at this level, if you are putting your attention to this particular person, this particular incident, this particular object, anger is arising. Now, as a way of getting out of it, now you are completely turning your attention to something else. So that is another approach Buddha mentioned. And then the other point Buddha mentioned is you are trying to recognize the root, trying to recognize the cause. Anger is there. Now rather than finding out the person, you little go deeper and see the reasons. Why am I getting angry? What are the real reasons? So you are going a little deeper to find out the causes, find out the reasons. So that is also as another method Buddha mentioned. So rather than allowing your mind to trapped in anger, you are now step back and see how it has developed to this level. How it has come to this level. What are the... initial stages, the previous causes make you angry. So likewise, you are little you are using your Yoniso Manasikara to recognize the previous reasons, causes. So that is another method Buddha mentioned. And then another thing is, the last one actually Buddha mentioned, the fifth one, is where you are kind of controlling yourself using the physical power. And you are very much like kind of condemning yourself, I mean, kind of strongly criticizing yourself and criticizing your mind, not allowing it to do it. So likewise, you are using the willpower to stop it. So that's another method. Now, these are actually the methods, as I mentioned, in Vitakka Santana Sutta, comes in Majjhima Nikaya, but the main method mentioned in Satipatthana is completely different, where you are directly confronting the defilement. But for that to happen, you need to have strong mindfulness and clear comprehension.
So that is, you watch it, right, Bhante?
Yes. You step back and watch the defilement as defilement. And that very understanding, that very mindfulness, clear comprehension is capable to overcome the defilement. Because you disengage from defilement. You are completely free from the defilement. At that time, you look at defilement objectively. Not as a subjective situation, but you are looking at it objectively.
when I meditate, all these anger and all, nothing comes up, Bhante. But of course, in real life, some of it comes. But I have found that as you are living the Dhamma, these things get less and less. Because also you mentioned, that last one where you, one before the last, you said, turning away, because I try to avoid those people who bring up all these irritations, Bhante?
Mm, yeah.
So that is also a way of turning away, no, Bhante?
Yeah, turning away. And the thing is, that is, to some extent we can do it. But sometimes we can't, because there are situations we can't avoid. We have to go through it. Then on such occasions, definitely we have to, there are various other things. Actually, you can develop patience. You can do this, as you said, the turning away. You can avoid such situations. You prevent going to that kind of situations. So many methods are there.
But ultimately, one has to be able to just be calm and equanimous. No, Bhante?
Yeah, that means
the goal.
That's the goal. And again, you can quickly recover. Now, even you understand, say, okay, I get into anger. So you recognize it, and you quickly, as a result of that recognition, so as a result of the power of that mindfulness, clear comprehension, suppose anger quickly dissipates. So powerful, your disengagement is so powerful, so the anger become helpless in a way. Anger become rootless.
Yes.
Anger consumes our own energy for it to nourish. But if you are not promoting it, if you are not nourishing it, if you are completely disengaged from it, then anger alone can't sustain.
No.
Yeah.
The thing is, as we are on this spiritual journey, Bhante, a lot of these things that you mentioned don't arise now. Bhante.
The other thing, that's what I want to highlight too. Now, they may not arise during our meditation session. while you are sitting, they may not arise. But how about other occasions? So,
a lot of these things now don't arise, Bhante. I'm just saying, with all humility,
It's good.
But because you are our teacher, I have found, of course I get irritated from anything. That's one thing that I have to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Irritation comes up. But a lot of the other things really, you mentioned like envy, jealousy, all those things. Nothing comes up, thank God for that. Nothing to do with me. It's just a practice.
Yeah.
It's just a practice.
Yeah.
And it helps to just be equanimous and to have, the four divine abodes, to be happy for other people's successes. Mm.
Exactly. So that's why, the development of the wholesome side. As you mentioned, the divine abodes, loving kindness,
yes,
compassion, altruistic joy, equanimity. So now you are promoting that the positive side. So as a result of that, the negative, unwholesome states, they diminish and they can't overpower you. So there are many sides helps in this situation. It is not just one approach. That Buddha has given many approach, many methods, many strategies. So using all these different strategies, actually we are being protected, our mind being uplifted, our mind being purified. So the other thing is, I want to highlight now, as practitioners, we come to the picture, we start our practice as, say, sitting, walking, and that's a kind of a formal practice. Now later, that practice has to pervade, expand to other activities as well. Say while eating, in the daily activities. Now say you are talking with someone, you are participating in a meeting, you are conducting a session, say you are involved with some other labor work, another kind of community work, and all these are the occasions that you have a quite higher potential for the defilements to arise, because you are dealing with others. You are not alone.
Exactly.
And you are not alone.
Yes, and they are not prepared. They are not people who are practicing in the same place as you.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
So it's very easy to lose one's clear comprehension and mindfulness and everything.
Correct. So that is where. So we have to be quite resilient. We have to be quite, ready, prepared through our practice, even to handle that situation. I mean, we can't expect everyone to respect us, everyone to understand us, everyone to coordinate with us, everyone to listen to us. We can't expect that from the world. So there may be people who are criticizing us. There may be people who are looking down us. Not appreciating what we are doing, and they go through all different defilements. Now we are talking defilements with respect to ourselves, but many others are victims of these defilements. And when they become victim of these defilements, how they are operating? Now, they are operating like wild in a way, completely deluded, and we are the opposite party. So then we are subjected to the kind of the repercussions. Say someone is angry, even though I am not angry, someone else is angry. Now he start blaming, he start condemning, criticizing. So how are we going to face that situation? Are we also going to criticize? Are we also going to react? Or are we able to calm down ourselves? Are we able to stop ourselves? Are we able to avoid anger rising in our mind? So these are the real situations actually we can think of. A very, very beautiful simile Buddha gives. Sache neresi attanam kanso upahato yatha esa patto sinibbanam sarambho tena vichati. In Dhammapada, Buddha mentioned, now say someone is criticizing you, someone is blaming you, someone is belittling you. So if you are capable of calming down yourself like a broken gong, like a broken, a metal vessel, which is not reverberating, which is not giving echo, you can simply stop. Then Buddha mentioned you are like a person who has attained Nibbana. Because you didn't promote that ripple in your mind. It has come, it has hit the mind, and you stop there. That's it. You are not promoting it. You are not thinking about it again and again. You haven't gone for revenge. Sarambha, yes. Sarambha means you do tit for tat. Say if he hit, you also hit. If he blame, you are also going to blame. So that's the sarambha. Now you are not going for that. Then Buddha says, okay, you are like a person who attained Nibbana. So I mean, these are all very practical dhamma. I mean, these defilements are not in the book. These defilements operate in our mind. They happen in our mind. I mean, whenever they happen in the mind, so our duty is to notice them. Rather than being a victim of them, how quickly we can be free from them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because when we watch others also, we can also know that when we watch others who have emotional outbursts, we can also learn from that ourselves, isn't it, Bhante?
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, they also have the same mind. As I get angry, that person also can get angry.
And when we see others getting emotional outbursts, then we see how ugly it is. And if we also react in the same way, we can have a sense of shame also about
exactly.
At the end of the day. If we also react like that.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Actually, that is the whole theme of Anumana Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya.
As you say, it's all the practice and all the and one's personality also comes. You know, some people I know who are very peaceful all the time. They don't get perturbed. But that is for. I can remember in school also. I had this friend. She never She was just minded her own business. She never reacted to anything. So that also was a part of the personality, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay,
thank you, Sanjay. The next one is a a written question. Dear Venerable Bhante, how do you give up remembering past hurts by others, especially your siblings? How do you let go and spread metta to them, their wants and nights?
So that's the thing. I mean, one part is that forgiving. I mean, are you benefiting from holding such grudges? Are you benefiting from holding such memories? So basically, they become a burden to the mind. So someone else has hurt you. Probably you are correct, but that person is wrong. Doesn't matter. But you are the ones hurting yourself. So why are you keep hurting yourself? So that person has only mentioned a particular comment only once. Then she has gone. But now you are telling the same comment to yourself 1,000 times. That is where we are burning ourselves unnecessarily. Another party has mentioned or criticized you only once, but the again and again, whenever we are thinking about it, we are hurting ourselves. So I mean, one side of this is the mental proliferation, where you keep on thinking about what has happened, keep on thinking, going on and on. Ultimately, you are suffering, basically. So that is where the practice is really helpful, to stop yourself, keep the mind calm. So rather than you promoting, thinking that I am right, he is wrong, what he said is wrong. So understanding, okay, I am the one going to suffer if I allow my mind to think about it. Understanding that, I mean, you are the ones going to lose. That person has already gone. And you can give certain reasons like, okay, I am going to forgive him. Doesn't matter whether he is correct, he is wrong, I am going to forgive him and I am going to forget it. Because I want to safeguard my mind. I am not interested of harboring those, harmful thoughts or revengeful thoughts anymore in the mind. Because I want to keep my mind fresh. I want to keep my mind unburdened. My mind pure. Because I am safeguarding myself. So likewise, we need to think about ourselves, because ultimately, if we are thinking again and again, if we are harboring these things, if we are remembering all these things, there is no benefit for us. We are the ones again and again hurting ourselves. So the ability to forgive, ability to forgive and ability to forget is therefore one important thing. So as we discussed earlier also, the more you keep your mind pure, the more you keep your mind unattached, unassociated. So all these past memories, hurtful situations, probably at the beginning they pop up. They may come to the surface of the mind. You can notice them, you can simply let them go. Rather than holding them, rather than promoting them, you can notice them and simply forgive and let them go. Then ultimately they are gone. They are gone for good.
Teruan Sarnai Bhante.
Yeah.
My question is, so basically during meditation, all these the thoughts that come and go, which don't kind of stick and kind of, give any value to them, but nevertheless they're there. Are all of them actually upaklesas?
No, we can't say so. Because, you know, one hindrance is the restlessness of the mind. So we can't guarantee what mind is going to think. And again, we don't need to it is difficult for us to recognize all these quickly passing by thoughts, to recognize to which category or to which defilement they belong. But probably we can see, okay, there is no kind of a real relationship. They are simply coming, they are very much like random thoughts, then they belong to the restlessness.
Okay, so only if you get sort of kind of involved in a thought and then you recognize, this is either angry thought or a lustful thought or whatever, then that alone fixes the problem, and you can get back to your object of meditation, correct? Or should you dwell further on all the other points that you said?
No, actually,
it depends.
Actually, it depends. It depends. At the beginning, at the beginning, your refuge is the meditation object. So, I mean, you can't immediately handle defilements by yourself because still the mindfulness, clear comprehension is weak. But at that moment, what we do is we consider all these defilements as distractions, and quickly as possible, we are trying to return back to the meditation object. But later, this defilement starts our teacher, becomes our teacher, where we understand our character, where we understand our personality traits, what are our kind of tendencies still available in the mind, where we are. So that is being represented using the defilements. So there is a kind of a very, say, subtle exploration that one can do during fairly, I mean, say, once you are capable. Say, where you are involved with Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, then you can do a kind of a deep analysis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Tirwan Sarnai Bhante.
Yeah.
Bhante, I want to know if I understood this correctly.
Yeah.
So you said the Vitakka Santana Sutta has these five things, are they just temporarily controlling emotions, but confronting using Satipatthana Sutta method is the one that helped to eradicate it? Is that what you meant by?
Actually, we can say so. We can, to some extent, that is also true. But the thing is, it's a kind of a combination as far as I can say. Because even when you confront particular defilement in a particular situation, I mean, it may be gone for some time. But again, it can appear. Again and again, you can practice the same Satipatthana method. So that is one approach. Doesn't matter. And it depends actually how you are handling. So therefore, we can't say that every time the ultimate method is the, say, recognizing and be mindful about it, and as a result of that, letting it pass by. So that is the ultimate, that is the only method. We can't say like that. There are many methods available, but as you said at the beginning, so that particular method is not yet available for us. We are still not capable of doing that, implementing that method. On such situation, those previous five methods are quite useful. Because they are within our purview, we can handle using those methods. But later, another additional advanced method is also available for us.
So for example, like emotion like fear.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that you have to face it, you have to confront it, otherwise it will keep on coming.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes noting these things, is it the same as confronting them?
Yeah, we can say to some extent. No, I mean, in order to confront, first of all, we need to notice them. So we note them. We recognize, okay, when anger is there, so quickly we recognize that, rather than operated by that, rather than reacted by being a victim of that. We can note it. Yes.
Yeah, Bhante, what I'm mentioning is in Mahasim method, you know, noting thing.
No. That is a very primary level or kind of initial noting kind of thing. In Mahasi method, the Mahasi method, the noting referred every time, say, we are lifting, moving, thinking. So likewise, at the early stage of the practice, say, you are not really capable of immediately confronting things. Rather, you keep noting things. But here, what we are talking is not that kind of noting. So you are capable of keeping the mind completely silent even. While keeping the mind silent, you have noticed the defilement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understood the difference now.
Yes.
And then, you know, you have mentioned several times that while we do walking meditation, it is very important that we practice, we have bird-eye view. And is that the beginning stage of being a detached observer?
To some extent, yes. Because, I mean, bird's eye view means that your mind is quite beyond. You are not establishing your attention onto a particular object, but you can't do it forcefully. Actually, it's a kind of a systematic process, step-by-step process. So you, first of all, you need to pay close attention to something. You are observing its behavior. So likewise, that stage has to be completed. You have to go through that stage where you are observing the behavior of various phenomena. Now, as a result of the wisdom that we gain through that observation, now mind become capable of maintaining the bird's eye view. It is not that you are willfully trying to maintain the bird's eye view, but rather through the practice you are capable of doing that. You will now become, I mean, effortlessly doing that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah. So we have a question from this side. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, Bhante. So I think earlier you were talking a little about papancha, mental proliferation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's were saying earlier, that's when you have a thought or something, and it just keeps proliferating, and it becomes an obsession.
Correct.
So I guess, what are ways that we could kind of stop this papancha from, you know, this mental proliferation from continuously happening? Because I think obsessions, they can perhaps be very difficult to get rid of once they're in the mind. Yeah.
Exactly.
So what can we do to kind of get rid of that papancha?
Yeah, I mean, you're asking a very strong question. Very interesting and very powerful question. So it is the whole practice in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So the overcoming prapancha, overcoming this obsessive thinking, actually involve all sila, samadhi, panya.
Mm-hmm.
So sila is required, modality is required, concentration is required, wisdom is required. All three aspects, all these three trainings are required in order to completely overcome prapancha. So, I mean, later we can say, okay, now I am completely handling it merely or primarily using wisdom. But in general, Buddha has mentioned all these three aspects to overcome defilements, or rather overcome mental proliferation. So if you refer Sakkapanya Sutta, so that is where Buddha has given a kind of a comprehensive answer to the question. Sakkapanya Sutta available in the Digha Nikaya.
Okay.
Sorry, I got unmuted. I disconnected. Now I think, hope you can hear us.
Now we can hear you again, Bhante.
So the question came from Venerable Sumana that how to overcome mental proliferation, because mental proliferation becomes one of the strong aspect of our defiled mind. So actually this question is asked from the Buddha by Sakka, the god Sakka. So there the Buddha's answer is quite descriptive. And he has basically touched upon all these three trainings: the modality training, the concentration or the collectedness training, samadhi, and the panya, the wisdom training. So overall, it's a broader subject. So we have to use certain aspects of sila, certain aspects of concentration, certain aspects of wisdom, and all together, when they are operating properly, then the one is capable of subsiding this mental proliferation.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, individually we can have different methods. Actually, even now, say this calming down thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Say when anger arises, how you are calming down. That's what we are discussing, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it also can even say, okay, that's part of morality, part of concentration, part of wisdom. So likewise, certain flavor of morality is there. Certain flavor of concentration is there. Certain flavor of wisdom is there. So likewise, the general answer, we can say all three trainings are necessary.
Thank you, Swami Hansen. I had a few comments, and so what I'm hearing is that we are seeking to see defilements in a non-identification, in a non-self, non-self observation of things without attachment of one's defilement. So, of course, we find in meditation that we are developing this ability to look at and observe phenomena of body and mind, promoting an objective observation. And I find that now that's, I'm finding in my meditation that I'm coming to some very clear equanimous states where I don't have any, there's clearly an equanimity and clarity of mind and non-attachment, and I'm just observing. There's just a clear mindful presence. And I've noticed lately that some of the defilements that I've struggled with for years, like sensual defilements of coffee and chocolate, which are have become extremely painful lately. It's just, and I think it's partly the environment as well. It's very dry right now, and they dry me out. But I just have to give them up completely because my sensual desire towards them is very strong, and the excitement of that. But then I'm also experiencing this great sensitivity to the suffering that comes with it, which I think may be related to my meditation recently that has gotten very equanimous. And so I hadn't put that together until you mentioned that today, that there's some connection between having experienced the non-attached mind and becoming very sensitive to defilement. One other thing I wanted to mention is that I've been very interested lately with the Buddha suggested here, you had mentioned looking for the reasons behind our defilements. And for me, that has... bringing mindfulness to defilements in the sense that as we're children, we develop due to our parents, our environment. Very early on, we develop strategies for dealing with difficult situations that our parents brought. Maybe our parents were very strong and demanding and very punishing or something. And so the child very early on learns skills subconsciously to how to adapt to that situation, and then they carry that on through life. Some people may become very aggressive, very confrontational, very controlling. Some people may become very submissive or reliant on others and needing love. And so when we develop these early developments in childhood in psychoanalysis, some of the, there's a, Karen Horney was a German psychoanalyst that I'm reading, and I find her, her extremely insightful, looking at the development and how people develop these sorts of strategies. And the thing is it's so the Buddha's suggestion to look for the reason behind anger, it's can be very involved with our personal relationships with others, so it's very hard to understand it. So it it's brought me a lot of awareness for the reasons why I tend to be a certain way, or you know, maybe clingy or needy of others. And so she very thoroughly and insightfully took apart these different type of character types. And so I just suggest that for myself, it's brought regards to bringing a non-identified kind of objective view of oneself rather than just taking it for granted, you know, well, I'm just angry, to more better understand mindfully the circumstances around that are an actual psychological development in early childhood that's unknown to me now, but at the once we start to understand the psychoanalytical causes, it can be helpful to bring a non-personal sense to our defilements.
Correct.
I just wanted to say, it's just another way of you have to have the meditation, but I find that this other approach is also very good for
definitely.
Me.
So those approaches are also quite valid and quite important. And as you said, our childhood experiences, our upbringing, our culture, and all these things have a great impact on our mind. So I mean, how we are reacting, how our behavior is now being, prepared in a certain manner. So all these things have a great impact coming from all these different conditioning.
Yes.
Now, understanding all these conditioning, how we are operating, how we are reacting, what are the tendencies I have, all these things are, as you said, are being facilitated when we are able to understand that empty mind. So empty mind is a fairly unconditioned mind. It's an uncolored kind of a mind. So there you understand, okay, this is the simple nature of the mind. This is the original nature of the mind. Now I am not being conditioned by my childhood experiences. I am not being conditioned by the cultural upbringing. I'm not being conditioned by any other defilement. Okay, this is the very pure, very relaxed kind of awareness currently I'm experiencing. Now you have a taste of it. So once you have a taste of it, then you can recognize, okay, which coming from which direction. Okay, now assume that you get a certain tendency, as you said, to eat a chocolate. So probably immediately, rather than you are implementing that desire, you can see, okay, how now I am getting this particular desire, from where it has come from. Is it from my childhood? Is it from my any kind of culture, my society, or my kind of being conditioned by the advertisements? So likewise, there are many, many reasons are in a way influencing us. So when they are influencing us, recognizing from which direction now this is coming from actually is a kind of a challenge. It's a difficult situation, difficult thing. So, I mean, recognizing it is a real revelation that, okay, yes, it has coming from this particular area. Okay, I am being conditioned to that. My father was bringing this particular chocolate to me again and again. Then I started having a kind of a attachment to that particular brand, something like that. I was watching a particular advertisement for a long time. That advertisement has unknowingly implanted kind of an attachment to that particular brand. All these things can happen.
But I was particularly, the psychoanalysis is regarding relationships with people, how like anger and resentment can come up, and ill will and so forth. Those are the things that for psychoanalysis, understanding the causes for the rising of the anger and defilement. The chocolate, I mean, it's more having to do with, I mean, there could be some of those connections, but that's a more kind of a base defilement that's it's causing me suffering, and it's also keeping me chained to sensual desire as being this is going to make me happy. This is going to, you know, there's something that says, you know, I'm going to be...
motivated.
I'm going to be happy by chocolate. But
correct,
that
correct.
Actually, meditation, it leads us to much higher freedom.
Yes, yes.
Freedom from chocolate would be a great
correct, correct. Good,
so,
good.
Thank you, Simon.
Yeah, yeah, welcome. Okay, we then get the last question maybe from Sam.
Yes, and actually, sorry, Bente, before a participant had asked whether Bente you could share where to find the Sakkapanya Sutta in India.
Yes, yes, Sakkapanya Sutta is available in the Digha Nikaya, Long Discourses of the Buddha. Digha Nikaya, Long Discourses of the Buddha. Jennifer, are you there?
Okay, yes. Thank you, Bente.
Yeah.
Alright. I'd like to invite Sam for maybe the last question of the night. Sam, if there's
Thank you, Jennifer. Bente, what I have is not a question, but I want to share something that I learned recently.
Uh-huh.
From Venerable Bhikkhu Analeya.
Right.
He said when there's a situation of anger and disagreement between two people, don't think of that as between two individuals.
Mm-hmm.
He said, think of in a different way that person is getting angry because he has defilements.
Mm-hmm.
And you are reacting to it because you have defilements.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a clash of defilements.
Exactly.
In other words, he said, keep the individuals out and you can resolve the issues much easier that way.
Exactly.
It's a clash of defilements. It's very interesting interpretation.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much for sharing that idea, because that is what... even highlighted, I think, by one of the great arahants, Venerable Subhuti, I think, one of the Therigata, so some another incident, or even maybe in the Aranavibhanga Sutta, I can't exactly remember. So that is the point highlighted. So rather than see that I am angry to another person, probably if we can say, okay, that there are anger there, and here another reaction coming towards that anger. Anger is also coming from this side, so that there are anger now in the situation. So defiled minds are there. So likewise, I mean, whenever we are talking, whenever we are reacting, whenever we are getting into arguments and all these things, I mean, in the ultimate sense, there are no persons. There are no individuals. What we are doing, I mean, how things have happened is that the defilements have come forward and it has overwhelmed the mind, and now it is, I mean, our body, words and everything being conditioned, overpowered by that defilement, and those are in operation now. Now, if we can understand this kind of a thing, then definitely, I mean, we can be ashamed of what's going on. So I am being a victim of this whole process. I am like a puppet in this whole this process. And if I can get that proper understanding, okay, then I can slowly come back to my senses and overcome that situation. So rather than promoting a self-view, now I am actually trying to learn from that situation, and I am even promoting some wisdom through that situation. Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much. Okay, I think we can wind up the session today. I mean, we have spent about 1.5 hours. So the merit that we have accumulated, let's share with all the celestial beings, all the past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. We'll recite the traditional verses. Etta vata cham hehi sambhatang punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Etta vata cham hehi sambhatang punya sampadam sambe bhuta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Etta vata cham hehi sambhatang punya sampadam sambe satta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya.
akasattha ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam akasattha ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam
akasattha ca
bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param idam vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo idam vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo idam vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā sādu sādu sādu